Hi, I'm Wayne Butterfield. I'm the Global Lead for Automation Solutions at ISG Automation. And this is what happens when machine meets world.
Live from Infinia ML, this is Machine Meets World. And now, here's your host, James Kotecki.
Happens when machine meets world.
Thank you so much for helping conversation today with your British accent, which I think you have to agree makes everything sound a little bit more intelligent, even though we're talking
I'm going to take that as the compliment that it was intended, and
absolutely
and not pass judgment, but I don't speak the Queen's English. I'm a northerner, so I come from the north of England, and I'm sure my English colleagues watching now would laugh at the thought that my accent makes everything sound more intelligent, but I will take that absolutely, James.
Well, please do. I mean, we're so unsophisticated linguistically here in America that we'll kind of take whatever we can get. But let's get into the meat of this conversation, ISG automation. And just first kind of all, can you just kind of contextualize for the audience where you're coming from? I believe on the site, ISG is, talks about itself as a consulting firm that is focused on operational excellence. So can you just give our audience a context for where you fit in that broader framework?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're a global consultancy on the NASDAQ, probably 20 years, I think, since founding. I work within the service line of automation. I'm one of our directors within that service line. Obviously, I ran a EMEA business. I'm now part of the American team. And again, our role within business is to help people do things better, faster, cheaper through the procurement of services and software, of which automation for me is both my passion and certainly the area that me and ISG Automation, which is a component of ISG, purely focus on.
And is ISG focused on one particular company type or segment of the economy, or are you focused on one particular type of industry?
No, I'm a bit of a jack of all trades. I mean, financial services is an area that has obviously seen a lot of focus on from an automation perspective, but anything from media and entertainment, healthcare, pharmaceutical, financial services. I mean, my background is telecommunications, so anywhere that there are people are areas where we see value with automation. Even in software companies themselves, there are certainly opportunities to do a lot more with tools like robotic process automation, as an example.
Well, you talked about your background and you just said the magic phrase robotic process automation. This has been your background for, I believe, 10 years, right? You were something of a pioneer in the field of RPA. So take me back 10 years ago. What did that actually even mean at the time? What were you doing?
So I'll take you back 10 years. So my forehead is a lot less wrinkly than what it is now. There's a lot less gray hairs. I had a business challenge, right? So my business challenge was labor arbitrage benefits were starting to wane a little bit. The costs in India were starting to increase. As always is the case, I work for an organization that wants to reduce its operating costs. And so reduce operating costs, rising costs in India. There's only so much you can do with labor arbitrage. And so we needed to look at something different. And it actually happened to be a corridor conversation I was having with my CFO, who says, he went to school with the founder of an organization who were, claiming to be able to do some kind of, automation that was no code, low code. It wasn't called that at the time, but that's the equivalent of, are you interested in having a catch up? And that was, that was probably 2009, late-ish 2009. And that company was Blue Prism, who later went public in 2016 and have just been taken private again in 2021. And basically, it wasn't even called RPA then. The marketeers hadn't got hold of it. It was called Operational Agility Software. Wow. So no wonder it hadn't taken off and exploded, because there's nothing less sexy than something called operational agility software. Let's throw a few robots in there. Let's call it
talk about the robots.
Automation, and suddenly we're on a rocket ship to be the fastest growing software segment in the world over the last kind of 2, 3, 4 years. So from humble beginnings of operational agility software to the huge and growing industry that we now know as, you know, RPA, intelligent automation, or even hyper automation.
I think the last 10 years could be an interesting way to look at maybe what will happen in the next 10 years with some of the more advanced AI technologies that we're going to talk about in this interview. But I'm curious, if you were a pioneer back 10 years ago, it seems like flash forward to now, some people are very sophisticated with RPA. Some companies are just catching up to the idea that maybe they should be taking a look at this. Have you been surprised by the diversity by which different companies have actually taken this technology on?
Surprised, probably not. Do you know what? I see this technology as just a form of digital outsourcing. And if you think the outsourcing industry, you know, is 20, 30 years, you know, in the making, this for me really, you know, if we take away the technology angle on this, all it's really doing is just providing a cheaper, better, faster service, which in theory was, you know, in a large part exactly why companies looked at outsourcing. And, you know, we can argue to say that, you know, we're looking for specialist knowledge and this, that, and whatever. The vast majority of the reasons why people outsource is for a business case, a positive business case, and to lower their operational costs. I don't see RPA being any different to that. And of course, with outsourcing as well as RPA, there are people at different levels of maturity. You know, you have people who are on like kind of fourth, fifth generation of their outsourcing contracts now, you know, big, long, decade-long deals. There's a lot of tenure within that space. From an RPA perspective, you know, people onboard at different times. And, you know, there's loads of stats, James, that kind of say, look, you know, just about everyone's doing it, and that's great. You know, 85% of organizations in, you know, one of the latest reports are doing something with RPA or intelligent automation. Okay, that's absolutely fine. But doing something could be the equivalent of outsourcing 10 roles in HR. Is that transformational? No. You know, it might be transformational for a small department within your organization, but it's not really significantly altered either your profits, your operating costs, your margins, etc. So doing something, yes, I think most people are kind of on that journey now. Doing something strategically and transformational, I would say that less than 1 in 10 organizations are there right now. And there are a number of reasons why. And guess what? Most of it isn't the technology, it's the business. You know, business challenges, you know, and you mentioned before, you know, more complex technology. Look, the most complex technology that's involved in a process right now is this, the brain. Like, we've designed work to be completed by the greatest computer on the planet, right? The human brain, regardless, you know, that ability to do what it can do in the speed that it can do it is unsurpassed in general terms by any technology right now. And we designed work with that in place. So we shouldn't necessarily expect a simple rules-based technology to come in and replace us. We're too smart. it's not a surprise for me why organizations run a different journey. A, they started that journey at different points, and B, it's actually their internal maturity and process maturity that will enable them to be better, be more transformational, rather than the technologies that they're using.
Well, let's talk about some of these more transformational advanced technologies that marketers like me have tied, at least linguistically, to what's actually going on in our brains. Cognitive automation, intelligent automation, artificial intelligence. This is the cutting edge, apparently, of where we are. So explain where you are with that and what you're doing with it.
Mm-hmm. So I like to break down both process and technology into characteristics that they replicate or consume. This very simple terms that I use is handwork for the kind of monotonous typing, moving data from one place to another. It's the stuff you could literally do with your eyes closed, okay?
Dragging your mouse.
If your eyes are closed, then that cognitive capability is probably not being utilized. So work you could do with your eyes closed is handwork. And that's what RPA is really good at. And all of that intelligent stuff, okay, is really what your head is doing, right? So I call that head work. Okay, you're looking at an invoice, you're interpreting a document, you're extracting a field in an unstructured email, for example. You are making a complex decision based on 24 different data points autonomously without even realizing that you've just made a really complex decision based on so many different data points. You're conversing, you're having a conversation either with a customer, with another employee through conversational AI. You're doing something. You're looking, you're reading, you're understanding, you're extracting, you're conversing. These are just characteristics that we just, you know, are, you know, fully autonomous with. Now, if you look at business process and you start to break down a business process into those characteristics, and we'll use, let's just use invoice processing as an example. You know, you're looking at an invoice, you're looking for specific fields. Okay, you're extracting the relevant fields. You're potentially making decisions around, you know, does this vendor match this? Does this volume match this? Does it match a PO? Is there a PO? So you're making all these micro decisions, and then you're inputting some of this data into a system. So, you know, you can see that there are different characteristics that you're looking to replicate when you automate these processes. And guess what? Most of it that I've just mentioned there in that process is not handwork, right? You're having to use, you know, your noggin, as we would call it in Yorkshire, where I'm from, that headwork capabilities.
So if we've been working on RPA or something called RPA for more than a decade, obviously AI as a technology has been around for many decades, but applied in this particular business context, I think for many people, it is relatively new and relatively cutting edge. Where do you see the cutting edge now? How advanced is the technology really, such that business leaders can actually think about how to realistically insert it into the processes that they might have?
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, for me, AI is still very good at two things. Clustering, you know, so creating, you know, pattern matching, etc. So, you know, that's one thing. And so you have to start thinking about, well, where in business problems is it important to have or find patterns? So things like, you know, fraud matching, maybe next best actions based on complex rule sets. You know, so that's kind of one area of AI systems or AI capability that then needs to be put into business software. So that's kind of an area, and, you know, we can talk about intelligent document processing, which kind of uses a lot of these patterns, clustering. You know, you're then able to make predictions based on these patterns and these clusters. So it's that kind of area where you then have to apply that to business problems specifically. So I don't really think that right now, you know, the prevalence of most AI in technologies is actually that great. If I think about, you know, going back to the whole marketing spiel, I don't think there's any tool now that's not claiming to have AI within their system. You know, we're powered by AI. You know, in reality, what does that actually mean? Well, you know, for me, from a business perspective, and to, you know, one of the things I aim to do is simplify the complex. I think there's a number of different components that are incredibly interesting and quite transformational. Machine learning is one. This ability to learn from data and make predictions. You know, what is the thing that I'm looking for? What, you know, where is the item in that document, that specific document based on history? So, you know, machine learning, you know, that ability to improve over time, natural language processing, things that involve the reading and interpretation of language. And, you know, NLP for me is truly transformational. If you think about speech recognition, if you think about, you know, conversing with a conversational AI bot, either in an IVR, in a company's mobile app, again, you know, that's kind of an area of real progress recently. In fact, you know, one of my clients, Speechmatics, have just announced they are now autonomously able to interpret speech. So, you know, it's a real push forward. That really is pushing boundaries in this, you know, autonomous way of being able to do things, right? Whereas historically, a lot of this has been driven by people creating rules that machines have, you know, learned from. So that's kind of where we're maneuvering towards AI doing things for us rather than us teaching AI. And I see that a lot in things like GPT-3. So if you think about language generation, the ability to let an AI create new language based on information that it has, you know, that type of area is both, you know, for me, incredibly exciting, also incredibly worrying. We've seen loads of examples of where allowing certainly conversational AI to be trained by people or trained by, let's say, Reddit threads, Wikipedia, you know, potentially biased content has led to downstream consequences. But if we can kind of get past that and allow language generation to be completed on the back of trusted sources, legitimate sources, regulated sources, then I think that's a really interesting area. And I think as we add natural language generation into the world of conversational AI, allowing things like chatbots to not just have their responses crafted, but be trusted enough to be almost autonomous in being asked a question that it may not have been asked before, and to be able to provide an answer that is both, you know, unbiased, you know, not racist, but also factually correct, and answering a question is like, that for me is the cutting edge. But I think with a lot of the cutting edge stuff, we're probably a bit, we as a race, as business leaders, are not quite there to hand over the keys to many of these truly cutting edge capabilities just yet. So there is that kind of balance between what is capable, what is possible, versus what we actually want to happen right now. So so that's a great, and you know, the team at Infinia, again, if you think about cutting edge and documents and understanding loads of unstructured information, I would say that is really cutting edge capability also, and really pushing the boundaries of going beyond structured and maybe semi-structured documents to really start being able to find the needle in a haystack in, you know, large documents. That again is cutting edge.
Well, I appreciate the shout out. As a member of a consultancy, you're maybe well positioned to talk about what the pitfalls are when people try to put these cutting edge, or even just, you know, not quite the cutting edge, but still relatively advanced technologies into practice. You know, well, it's one thing to demonstrate that the technology is able to do this. It's another thing to actually put it into production on a technical basis. And then it's another thing to actually get business leaders and frontline people to actually use and trust this and integrate it into their processes, or maybe have to change their processes. So when the rubber meets the road, when people are actually trying to implement this kind of thing, what are some of the pitfalls that you see in your business?
A lack of change management is probably the biggest, right? I mean, people are creatures of habit. Right? We have to be honest. You know, people say we don't like change. I would say, you know, we're extremely adaptable, but we are creatures of habit, right? Sometimes we have to be dragged kicking and screaming. And so for me, this world of intelligent automation, hyper automation, whatever you want to call it, really is a people play. And those that are successful, I think they understand that there's as much emphasis needs to be put on the people as on the technology. And I think that's often missed because, hey, guess what? We've got shiny new technology that's cutting edge, right? So we want to concentrate on this, but actually it's worthless unless we really bring our people on the journey. So not only just bring our people on the journey, involve them, be transparent with them, ensure that they see things as a help, not a hindrance. But again, it's all on the people side, right? It's all on the people side, because if we don't bring them on the journey, not only can they be your greatest ally, they can also be the cause for any transformation program to stop. Because guess what? There is no way you can monitor, I'll tell a lie, actually there is, But let's pretend there's no way that you can monitor every single employee every single minute of the day, okay? And therefore, if they decide to do or not do what you want them to do, they will do it, right? You know, and that's just kind of the way of the world. So you have to ensure in any transformation program, especially those that involve automation technologies that are, in theory, changing the way people work from what they're used to, what they are, what their habits are, to something different is, you know, you just have to bring them on the journey. And the other thing, which is really interesting, process. You know, I mentioned it before, we've designed process, business process, with the brain in mind. And so you really do have to think about your process. Can you automate a process? Of course you can. Do you want to? Probably not. Is it worthwhile spending 6 months leaning something out? Debatable. Do you already have the data to be able to do that? Yes. Well, maybe you should do. Do you have it? No. Do you want to wait 6 months while you gather the data? Again, probably not, because there are technologies that can do that for you. So, you know, I think people and process are probably the two challenges. It's generally not the technology. You know, most of these technologies now are, you know, pretty well enterprise grade. Yeah, there's some bells and whistles on many of them, but they're generally solving business problems. And so, you know, if you're solving a business problem, you're not overly expensive, and you get the people and the process bit right, then really these things should pretty much fly. He says, obviously that's not always the case.
And then it's all smooth sailing, right?
Absolutely, every time.
I love this framework that you have of knowledge management work having historically been designed for the computer that is the brain. And just that framework to think about what happens when you add other kinds of computational power into that arrangement. Do you think at some point in your working life, there will be something that flips where now we will, or maybe in some ways we're already there, where, and maybe that's incorrect, that we shouldn't be there. What I'm saying is the idea that maybe some processes are built to serve other kinds of computers, and the brains, the human brains, are kind of like the augmented additional computers on top of that that have to adapt to what the computer is doing.
Mm-hmm. I think we're not necessarily there yet, but only because we're not in the right headspace. So if you think about most business processes that we complete, we shouldn't even be involved in the first place, right? Why do we need to be involved in the purchase of a product going all the way through our organization to the delivery of that product? Why does there need to be a person involved in any of that anyway, right? Why isn't that just fully automated in a system, in a tool? It's because we add all of this bloody complexity on top. You know, you know, certain business rules and this and that, and, you know, Dave over there likes it done in a certain way, right? In reality, you know, my view is we shouldn't even have people involved in the vast majority of work that happens right now. But we do, and, you know, and that's because, hey, we've designed systems and processes and workflows, again, with the human brain in mind. So it can deal with this levels of variation. Most organizations have oodles of data, right? They are just swimming in this stuff. Data, you know, is the lifeblood of ML, right? We should and will in the future make all business decisions based on data. At the moment, we do it based on opinion, somewhat experience, you know, but it's difficult to have experience of things like, how do we deal with a global pandemic? To be fair, it'd be really difficult for data to tell us what to do as well. But, you know, we deal with a lot of, you know, highest paid person's opinion. You know, we do it based on certain bits of experience. And a lot of it's just guesswork, right? And sometimes we guess really well and sometimes we don't. In the future, why do we need to guess, right? We need to just be fully laden with data-led decisions. And if we want to look at, you know, 2-3 versions of similar data and make an interpretation on that, and that's the augmentation of the people, It's like, look, data can tell us so many things, but, you know, I know I have this relationship. You know, data can't eliminate the human side of our abilities, like, you know, empathy, sympathy, you know, just know morals, doing the right thing, right? So sometimes data can say one thing, but our human side can tell us something different. And that's the level of augmentation that we should have. It's how do we bring these additional skills, these hecky skills, rather than the STEM skills, into the equation. And I think that's when we'll get to a point of where, you know, hecky augments data and machine learning. And I think that's that, you know, at that point, and we're not there yet, because A, we don't necessarily trust pure data-led decisioning. You know, we might do in some organizations, but I would guarantee that in 95%, we probably don't. Or we do in pockets, but not everywhere, because again, we think our ability to make decisions is greater than maybe than what it actually is. And I'll tell you a great example of this. I don't know if you've seen this. I think it's a hamster, right? So there's been a hamster. I'm sure it's a hamster who has basically been trading cryptocurrency. And, you know, what a great example of, you know, what we think we're doing, you know, really is, you know, brilliant. You know, I'm up 30, 40, 50% within 6 months. There's a hamster that's performing at exactly the same level based on when it spins its wheel. So, you know, a lot of what we think we're really good at and decision-making, in reality, is just potluck.
Did you say, and was the phrase you're using back there, was it, you said heck, as opposed to STEM, hecky?
What is heuristic, that? Empathy, what are the other two? Hecky. Sympathy is okay. One of them, yeah. I will dig it out, yeah.
Human stuff. Human, yeah. Emotional, soft.
Human
soft
characteristic stuff. It's like feelings. It's not data, it's feelings. And it's taken into account those additional kind of human characteristics that we have. You know, it's not the STEM stuff, you know, science, technology, engineering, mathematics. That is quite easy, I think, to replicate using technology. Very difficult right now to truly replicate sympathy and empathy. And you know, those emotional states that we have that can help make more educated decisions based on data. And that's the augmentation I think that we will bring in the future. When, certainly within my working lifetime, you know, within the next 10 years, I think we will see, you know, 50% of organizations making the vast majority of their decisions using data, pure data, with those hecky skills on top.
A couple of questions to close this out here. This is the lightning round. So just quick answers on this as we come to a close. You mentioned earlier the offshoring debate that you had 10 years ago when you were thinking about RPA and whether it's actually cheaper to offshore, maybe bring processes back onshore. With the current mix of technologies that you're seeing in your business, how are companies calculating that today? Do you think the balance is shifting again? Is it continuing to shift towards maybe bringing and automating more processes in-house, or is there still a strong case to be made for going overseas?
Both, you know, again, just to see both automation and outsourcing as tools in your labor arbitrage toolkit. You can't automate everything still. So there's absolutely a role for both of these, I would say.
Another question that we sometimes think about at Infinia is the question of build versus buy, right? Because we're a vendor, so obviously we want everybody to buy our stuff, but sometimes it makes more sense to build your AI, ML, intelligent automation solutions in-house. Do you have any kind of rules of thumb frameworks for people as they think about that?
Rules of thumb. I think in the world where we are right now, there's two challenges with the build. One of them is talent, and the second is probably linked to talent is kind of experience, you know, experience internally. It's like, could we do it yet? I always go back to a Jurassic Park quote. I love this one. You know, just because we could doesn't mean that we should, right? It's just like the whole build versus buy. Could we do it? Yes. You know, are we really going to, because it shouldn't be about the cost. It should be about the value, okay? And the value that you create. And I would like to think that bringing in expertise is going to help you create exponentially more value than you were able to do on your own even though you may be able to do it cheaper, doesn't mean you're going to be able to do it better.
I don't know what it says about AI that in my years of doing AI interviews, that's probably the quote I've heard most often quoted to me and that I have quoted to other people. And I've almost considered getting it like tattooed or something because it is such a fantastic quote. But in that movie, of course, dinosaurs run amok and eat everybody. So we need to be careful with this technology that we're using this quote for, obviously.
Exactly.
Wayne Butterfield of ISG, thank you so much for being here today on Machine Meets World. This has been great.
Brilliant. Thank you for having me.
And thank you so much for watching and or listening. Please like, rate, comment, subscribe. Let the algorithms know you like the show. We'll be back. I'm James Kotecki, and that's what happens when machine meets world.